अन्त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन्तुतिभिः सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः वेदान्तडिण्डिमस्तत्त्वम् एकम् उद्घोषयन्ति यत् आस्तां पुरस्तात्तत्तेजः दक्षिणामूर्तिसंहितम् Najiva Brahmanur, we were in 61, right? Mm-hmm. 62 to 64. Najiva Brahmanur Bhedaha, because the verses are almost the same. So we started last time, we can continue. Mm-hmm. Najiva Brahmanur Bhedaha Satta Rupena Vidyate Satta Bhedena Manam Syat इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः न जीव ब्रह्मणोर्भेदः स्फूर्तिरूपेण विद्यते स्फूर्तिभेदेन मानं स्यात् इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः न जीव ब्रह्मणोर्भेदः प्रियरूपेण विद्यते प्रियभेदेन मानं स्यात् Iti Vedanta Dindimaha. So these three verses are identical except the puts the Satta, Spurti, and Priya, otherwise puts that word in. The rest is all the same, like this. So Jiva Brahmanor Vedaha, there isn't any difference between the individual and the absolute, right? Between you and Brahman, Najiva Brahmanur Bhedaha, Satta Rupena Vidyate, in Sat. When you look at Sat, at the existence, there's no difference. And then it says, Satta Bhedena Manam Syat. In the case of the Sat aspect, there's no Pramanam to show that there's a difference. No valid Pranama to prove there's a difference. This is what Vedanta says. Same with Spurti, with that's Chit aspect. Same with Priya, the Ananda aspect. These three, you can't find a Pramana. Earlier, in the text, it was mentioned that there's the Pramana, why? For the Aikyam, why it's just one. Now, arguing the other way, saying, well, show me that there is a Pramana, valid Pramana for a separation. This is one of the arguments against Dvaita. Mm-hmm. It says not that Advaita has to be proved, the opposite, Dvaita has to be proved. Mm-hmm. There's no valid proof for Dvaita. How can you prove there's multiplicity here? Just look on the physical level. Are you separate from everything on the physical level? You can't find, if you look, go down to the level of particles, where's the separation? Mostly space. So you'll say these, in this huge, look at yourself as the individual, the space, mostly space. Is the space inside, outside the same? Subatomic particles jumping into out of existence, like this, appearing for a few moments, disappearing, here and there, and you say, okay, there's a difference. So when you start looking in any level, then you're not going to, if you really look closely, you can't really find it. So it's a misnomer that we take, but we build everything on it. This is what happens in the Bhagavad Gita, is that that's why Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that he is speaking like the wise, right? Like this. Because what happens is, the whole base of his, if the base of the argument is incorrect, it isn't base, and everything's built on it, that whole argument around could give it a very, make it look very strong, right? So probably this is what good lawyers do. They take totally what is totally not right, but they build such arguments around that they convince everybody like this. Or politicians. Politicians, they want to get in. They take one thing, which is an untruth. They build all this around, oh, everybody's so happy how great they are, and they're going to save the world. We have to get them in and elected or world is finished. That's what they try to make people believe. So here, though, we take the idea of the individual and we build so much around it, so it seems that it is so thick and so real. But my whole individuality in this life, just take it, how short the life is. Before this life, where was I the individual right now dealing with the world like this? Very soon after I leave the world, where is it? All the relations, all the things that I have. Just this morning, I looked in the news, said the previous, CEO or chairman of Tata passed away, billionaire. Okay, he's billionaire. Where are all his billions now? From his perspective, he's a billionaire now, wherever he is. Mm-hmm. Can he take, he leaves, he says, I want to take just a little bit with me. And the government will say, sorry, rupee notes you're not allowed to take out of India. You're leaving India, going to Swarga. So sorry, you can't take with you. So you can't, where is that whole thing? So it's for a blip of an eye here, but it seems so long, seems so real. Here, how duped we are in the dream itself. In the dream where there is no, just myself and my mind, I still hold on to some ideas individual and separate. But where is this separation there? So this is what it's saying. You can't find, if you look closely, you won't find the proof. You won't find like this. Yes?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. So do we carry the knowledge that we have gained?
Carry the knowledge we've gained?
When you die?
You have to know now or forget it. You'll never, you'll finish your... What happens, samskara is there, right? The samskara stays with you. Because here in this birth, you see different people come, they're babies, but different ones have the different potential, you know, suddenly they're excelling in certain fields they're not good at, certain characters is very developed, certain not developed. So the samskara goes into the seed form. So whatever our stronger interest, whatever it goes in. So actually a nice way that said is if you're digging, right, and you stop digging, you go, and you leave it for a little while. So some dirt gets in there, like some sand fills it. When you go to dig there again, that part you dug, pretty easily you're going to get the stuff out. Mm-hmm. Then, so that way, whatever you get to, that doesn't go away, whatever understanding you have. So it stays with you. This is why, you know, why it's not that if I don't, if in this birth, I don't get it. Just to, you know, I 75%, there's no 75%, but just let's say I'm 75% there. I don't start from square one next left, I'm from there, like this. So whatever wisdom is gained can't just disappear. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I can cover it up. I can just get tired, oh, this Vedanta or this spiritual stuff, you know it. I'm doing some time, it's not taking me anywhere, let me forget it. Let me just pursue, all, you know, make a lot of money and, you know, enjoy and become a space tourist and these things. So I can cover it up. But if I'm really sincere about it, can get covered up, but not for too long. Because it'll get covered up, I get distracted. And we still have the other habits that are, you know, the war between the rakshasas and the asuras and the devas is going on inside of us, yes. We can't say it's totally been, the asuras have been demolished. If they have been, then, you know, total sattva and it'll shine clearly and there's no question, no doubt. So we can't say it's not. So some of the time, yes, the rakshasas are, you know, are winning a battle and we're... But the thing is, we can't, there's no day that this can't just come up for us, this, when we're looking, once we're sincere. It's not possible because... Nothing else, our mind still brings up, oh, this will give me fulfillment, this will do. But very soon after, we say, well, it's okay, but it's not, that's not completely it. So that's why we can't, once you're caught, you can't run away from this. That's the thing. So we can keep doing slowly, you know, slowly taking our time this, but the thing is, it just makes us go through more and more, you know, of the suffering in this. And all, in the end, the right pace we'll find. We can't do it. We can't force it. But yet, it's not going to go away. And Gita talks about yoga brashta, right? When Arjuna asks the same question to Lord Krishna, if somebody doesn't get to the highest point and pass away, will that what'll happen? Will that person just become, you know, will all the effort go to nothing? He said, no, it won't. You know, be born in place, continue there. Like this. So in any case, so we have to look at what is the separation? What is separating me from everything else? Try and find it. There's a very nice exercise you try. You do either Shavasana or meditation, and you say, okay, focus on the border of the between you and the external world, meaning on the body. Focus on the edge of the body. Really try to find where the body ends and where the space starts. And you just sit, watch it. And if you really watch it closely, you find it kind of blurs. You find a blur between you and external world. If you really look at it closely, you'll find there's just a continuum. And then the idea that I'm just limited in this, yes, the sensation, I feel the sensation here, but out in the body, but outside I don't feel. In the body I also feel some areas I feel, some not. It's like you look at the stars, some bright and some not, feel the body. Some areas you feel, some not. So there also, it's not that it's just one continuum of sensation. But when you observe that, you see that the more closer you look at it, it doesn't feel, you see there's a continuum. There's not beginning and end like this. So it's a very nice exercise to do, to show to yourself, mm-hmm. even from sensation perspective, you look closely, you can't find a border between mm-hmm. Physically yourself and the external world. Mm-hmm. So this is a very nice little exercise you try. So in any case, so there has to be something that's separating me from other things. There's something between me and the world that's separating. And what happens is this. Just as we say the pot exists, but we really say pot is really clay, so the clay will take different forms. No matter what, you keep changing, the same substance is there, same existence is there. So the whole world comes from the same thing, so it's one thing of matter, right? One thing, material. And then it can take different configurations, the same materials, the same existence is there. So what happens in this way, when you take it as the same material, so it's one continuum of existence. So what's separating me physically from the world? You'll say, well, if something's separating me, if the border exists, meaning the border is the material that's creating me is existing. Material, external, existing. If the border between the external world is an existent element still, it's still the same existence. There's not separate existences. So then, it's just part of the continuum, like the example we gave last week, where you have a nice plate, and it draws there Mahabharata war, and you have Lord Krishna sitting here, and you have Karna, Krishna and Arjuna here, Karna the other side. What's separating them? The same copper material or gold material that's the plate. So there's no separation, the material, one material, like this. Just the Namarupa, you made some separation, but it's the same material, if it would have been a flat plate or if it has this drawing. So in this way. So if it's an existence separation, then it's not existence, part of the continuum of one existence. So in this way. So you say, well, it's non-existent. Well, correct, it's non-existent there. There's the no pramanam shows it's not. So if it's not an existent one, then what is it? Imaginary one, meaning it's the avidya. What separates me from the rest is avidya. It's misconception, that's all. And then you can do it on the mental level as well. The mind also, in the mind, what's separating in the mind anyway? What is separating the mind? Mind is all thoughts, right? A thought doesn't sit on its own. It's a wave in the thought stuff. And then when it subsides, for me to think, okay, I think I'm separate from something. I'm this much, and this part isn't me, like this in my mind. I'm only this much. Now, when that thought subsides, where's the separation? As long as the thought is there, and the thought is an idea, any idea is a limited idea. This is one important thing why we take the Shastra Pramanam, the Upanishad as the Pramanam, is we say it's apaurusheya. It's not knowledge that is born from the human mind. Paurusheya, knowledge coming from human mind, no matter how brilliant the mind is, it still comes from a mind which is limited. You know, let it be a billion times greater than the average mind, still, it's still limited because it's still a billion. If the average mind is unit one, this is unit a billion. What's the difference between a billion and infinite? It can't totally grasp. So still it'll be some limitation, some blemish in the idea. So that's why we say not born from human mind. And so if it's born from human mind, it comes with some tinge of the idea of limitation, like this. So you can't say that that's... So we say, well, Chastara isn't born from human mind, it's from direct knowledge of this, from direct knowledge of absolute. So this is pointing to it. And that's why also in just about all the texts, the accepted Vedantic texts by other Vedantic masters, they are referring to Shastra showing it's not my idea, it's based on that, based on what Shastra says, because if it's my idea, then nowadays everybody, when they sign something, it was my, they want, this is my thing, right? But here it's, you know, no, not mine, but the other way around, it's not mine, not my idea. If it's my idea, then it's a problem. Like this. So in any case, so from my mind, I say I'm limited, but when that thought goes away, where's the separation? So all the separations, the borders I create, you know, we create borders of countries, nationalities, all these different things, borders of, you know, this is my property, you know. You live here in U.S. In U.S., somebody comes on the property, they have the right to defend themselves, they can take out the... You know, here in Fremont we don't have a lot, but in some places in the country they'll come to you with a shotgun to say, why are you my property? That line of the property, this is mine. Like this. I know that there were Native Americans when white people came here and, you know, and what said, we want to own this property, putting fence on properties, they laughed at it. What do you mean by this is mine, this is, they didn't have that concept of this is my property, some of them. This is, you can enclose a land. What do you mean by that? Because it wasn't a concept they understood. Like this, what do you mean? So in any case, so you need the thought to separate. No thought, where's the separation? So people talk about, you know, having more expansive thought for unity in this. It's very good, but really, when you drop those ideas, there just is unity. You don't have to think about, you know. Like, look, doctors, right? A doctor, no matter who's in front of them, they take care. There's somebody who's a serial killer, who is sick, they take care of that person. They don't have a question about it like this. How to take care like this, they take care of the person. They just ingrained in them. Because they see just a person in front of them, not all the other things like this. What a wonderful thing how they're trained like this. Amazing. So in this way, that's that the thought is the separating thing, not and it's an idea, so it's not substantial. That's why when it comes from thought, it comes from some idea. An idea is already limited. An idea of infinite. We say idea of infinite, it's an idea. Right? And then like our Buddhist friends, maybe they won't say infinite, they say shunyam, nothingness. It's an idea too, right? Nothingness. And actually what I've heard from some, nothing meaning you empty from everything else. You empty. Or that mitya, it means mitya. Anything you take, it's made from other things. So it's not the thing in itself. Go further down because that's not the thing in itself. Go further, you know, to go to the particles, go to the atoms, go to this, and farther, farther, you're never going to find a thing like this. So they have some methodology like this to show that everything is manifest as mitya. But in any case, the main thing then there is that the thought will separate. So you use the thought to, we use the thought to transcend it too. But then eventually, what we're looking for can't be thought, because thought in itself already is a limitation. You can't take it as, that's the absolute like this. So this is, so from the material perspective, you cannot find any separation. If you find the separation, if you, because you haven't looked closely enough like this, that's all. And again, it's as, and here again saying satta rupena. It didn't say from the satta bhedena vidyate. Didn't say from the upadhi. If you put upadhi there, yes, upadhi, from upadhi perspective, yes. Upadhi, the room space. From the room space perspective, when you look at the upadhi, there's a separation. There's this much, these walls. And within these walls, yes, the space in here is separated from everything out there. Yeah, so then there's a separation of some sort, the external and internal. Fine. We're not talking about the upadhi, because in the end, the upadhi is inside the space. So the physical body, where do you experience it? You experience it in your own mind. So this is where you go to spurti rupena, from the perspective of chit, of consciousness. So I have the room space, I have the total space, the room, the walls are in the space. So the body, I say the body is separating me. Well, I'm conscious being, I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of the outside, inside and outside I'm aware. Right? So since I'm aware of both, right? Antara vaishishta tat sarvam vyapyana rayana sthitaha. Narayana, Lord Vishnu, is all-pervading. Inside and outside everybody. Well, the consciousness is I'm aware of everything inside me. I'm aware of outside me. Isn't that the Narayana? Because it's antarbahi. Antarbahi, it's inside and outside. Because it's same, or is your awareness observing external world? Your awareness observing internal world, your body, or even your antakaram, you're observing that. Are those two different ones? You need, you know, you need, like you have your phone, you need two apps. One app for internal observation, one app for external. No, same app. Same one. I'm aware of inside, I'm aware of outside, I'm aware. One chit. So the same one is observing the two. So how can they be? And you'll say, well, the issue is, though, it's observing, yes, but look, it's observing out, observing in, so it's observing two different things. You'll say like this. But that's when the thought comes in and says it's inside, outside. From the awareness perspective, there isn't a difference. It's like the sun shining and reflecting two different places. The reflections, from the reflections perspective, let's say we're separate. But from the sun's perspective, it's the same. You know, same thing, it's same sunlight. It's not different sunlight. So you can't in this way. And without the sunlight, there's no form to them, no color to them. Without the awareness, how nothing comes, nothing is experienced. So it depends on the consciousness. This is one of the big things to tackle, is that that there isn't an object separate from the consciousness. Because if you think of it, seeing, right? Seeing without seeing, there's no color and form. It's not an independent thing. Because there is something that, some wavelength that goes into your eye and creates a sensation, and the mind sees color and form. So it's projection, it sees, and then the mind puts an idea to it, what it is. So the sensation is there. But there's no such thing as an object color. It's a sensation. Sensation, so it's a certain, something appears in a certain way and then the mind puts its ideas on it. So there's no such thing as a color form like this. It's just from my mind, because of sensation, it takes it like this. So same with hearing, touching. So the whole world then is really depending on the awareful being, not an external object. That external object is from some sensation, the mind puts the whole thing together. So it's not that there is a table out there here, and that the table then, I'm seeing like this. Yes, so say something is there, something. But that something you can't grasp like this through the senses. You can't, because the senses are because of the mind. And then what's behind that, behind the senses and the mind, it's the consciousness, like this. So it's the one light reflected, that's it. So in any case, so the chit also, chit you say is separate, you can't. So there's a very interesting thing here. What you say is, first of all, you take the physical space outside, with the bhutakasha, and you say, bhutakasha, there's some limitation, but then look at from the chittakasha perspective, that limitation you see in from thought, there's thought of outside, thought of inside, thought of me, the individual, thought of world, so it's all in thought. And so all of that is in your chittakasha. So once you see it's in your chittakasha, then there's just the chittakasha, there's no, you can't find the separation like this physically, because all that is that you see is in your mind, just like in the dream, it's in your mind. Now you say that, so you see that that is the bhutakasha is within the chittakasha. So, but now you say, well, chittakasha, you say, well, I'm limited as a thinking being, my mind is limited. But then where's the chittakasha? You have is it inside, outside, or part of, or overlapping chittakasha? Everything you think, everything in your mind, you're aware, you're a conscious being. And the consciousness is there beyond whether thought is there or not. Thought is there, you as a conscious being are there. Thought isn't there, you as a conscious being are there, whether just analyzing deep sleep or when the mind is silent, then as chittakasha you're there. So it's beyond also that too. So it's also absorbed into, it's really, in that we absorb into chidakasha. So chidakasha, space like awareness. And why space like awareness? Because once you resolve things into chidakasha, there's no space. Space means there's some separation. So first we say, okay, space, at first we'll say the space of consciousness, but really, this I heard, I think Swami Nubhavanandaji, he's the one who always says space like awareness, and it must be some shastra base or something, because that it's obviously like that, because it's not real, because they say it's not really space, meaning space like awareness. At first you take it as space, but then afterwards, once everything is that, then there is no space. If space was totally empty, is there space? There isn't space, because space means there's distance. You need objects in it. So once you go to consciousness, then, so in this way, you absorb it by the physical to see it's in the mind, and then the physical separation out there, the mind into the consciousness, I am, just I am. Where's the boundary in I am? You say I am this. Okay, now you created some idea and boundary. But just I am, find the boundary, you start looking for it, you become something. I'm the one looking for the boundary. I'm the one looking for what's beyond the boundary. People are running around saying, I'm looking for for what's beyond the boundary. Just by looking, I'm looking for it, then I'm created by being the one trying to look, then there's a boundary. That's why they say mumukshutvam is very important. You have to be the one looking for it. At some point it also has to drop. Mm-hmm. At some point, but you know, what Swami Tattviranandaji, he said about that. Yes, it has to be dropped, or Swami Paramarthanandaji, or even both. But, you know, don't worry about it. Keep looking, it'll drop in good time. You drop too early, it's not going to be good. You know, it's like you want to drive to LA and halfway you start walking, you know. It'll be hard. Drive, you can get close to your destination, then you're there. It'll drop. So in any case, so that has to be dropped, because that too is, I'm trying to look. I'm trying to look at them. So, very nice. It's like, you know, the Raja Yoga type meditation. You're being more present, at some point you just drop, you're just present. Oh, very nice, like this. And as a Vedantic student, what I've found is that before it was just to be in my state. Now, you know, if that state's there or not, that's fine. But then I see, hey, I'm present. Nothing, I'm just present. It's just still the same I. And then if something comes in, when the mind wavers a little, am I same I or not now with this thought there? So it becomes much more, you know, useful not for just experience, but in order to for mananam nididhyasana like this. So in this way, we can't. This is how we show chitta aspect separation. You know, when you really look at it from these three levels: first physical, then mind, then consciousness. You're not going to find it. And again, it's not obvious. Something that's obvious, we'll just point out in this, okay, and then. But it's not so obvious because we're so caught up in so much other stuff. And then when we manage to put it aside a little bit, oh, it's very clear like this. So we just have to keep looking at it like this, looking at it, and you know, reflecting on it, because the mind has its other agendas. We sit, we listen to very nice. And the mind, meantime, quietly in the background, is cooking up what it's going to later come and and take over in this and argue against it or whatever. So, but it's not a problem, you know. We just have to recognize that and understand the mind for what it's for, what it is. You know, it's a tool, an instrument, like your phone is an instrument. Very nice. Mm-hmm. It's an instrument, a good one for certain things. For certain things, it's not so good, you know, like this. So. So this way, these are some things about it. So this is our sat and chit aspect, are like this. And actually, one thing about the also, what is it then that separates, from my perspective, avidya, but in what form? Namarupa, mm-hmm. Right? Some sensation there, and then it flags it, you know. It flags, and then where is this from? It has to be in my memory, because that's not right here this moment. Just here this moment, if I'm just now present, I'm just present, no problem. But then I'll say there is a siren, right? Why is there a siren? Because I remember in the past siren. Otherwise, it would just be sensation, present. Then I say, oh, it's continuing. The sound, you can tell if it's coming towards you or going away, if the sound is depending on the wave of how the sound is. Like this, it's coming closer away. How do you know? Because you remember a few moments ago or last time you heard it. If I'm present just now, where is it? So namarupa depends on memory. So for Vyavaharika, very helpful, because you meet somebody and they say, oh, this is my friend, this is my friend, his name is this and this. And you have chat in this, and then you bump into them a few days later, and you know, one time you bump into them, yeah, my friend told me, what was your name? Oh, it was you know, this, okay, George, okay, sorry, okay. But then they live in your neighborhood, you see them again, if you're not remembering, it's not very good. I'm very bad at remembering names. Like this, remember how that's helpful, right? You know, you don't remember your anniversary or something. Yeah, it's helpful to have your brother's birthday or whatever. So some memory is helpful for Vyavahara, right? But that's your Vyavahara. But from identity perspective, it doesn't help like this. In this way, it really doesn't help. Because inquiry, you're looking into, if something doesn't have substance, you know, you put it aside because it's not substantial. So in this way, and that, you know, present is really, it's really timeless, because present is totally timeless, but we take all the ideas of past and put it on it. We take our expectations of future and living in the right there. And we're always lost in those so much, where if we just put them aside a little bit, then where is all of that? It's really just these projections. And the more we loosen, drop them, then the more just, okay. And then that's why they say, you know, the jiva, this is in now in our Katha Upanishad, was pointed out, jiva is like a knot, and a knot between two things that you can't even make a knot out of, right? You can't really, but seems to be. So as you unravel, you see there's no knot at all. First we have to unravel, but as the vivekas were doing, we're slowly unraveling it, but then afterwards you see there was no knot at all, but until you unravel it, you can't really, you can't tell that. So you just keep unraveling, and then jiva is not a substantial entity. It's just, you know, like a movie character or something, it's not an entity, because an entity was born, you know, grew up, went to this school, went through these incidents. Here you just see a few things, and then you build this whole entity, and you think when the series ends or movie ends, oh no, but what'll happen with this after this? So then they always leave something open so they can make a continuation. They can't do it forever. So they make something to wrap it up and close, but then still you'll say, oh, but later what will happen to them, you know, blah, blah. What do you mean? There wasn't there to begin with. So here, we have a whole story of our life. There'd be a few incidents, this life finishes and that's it. So then we'd say, what'll be with all that? Just another story, right? Another story. And the more our mind identifies the story, then it's a big thing. We don't identify too much of the story, we're freer. we're free from this story. And you know, the more I identify with the story, the more problematic it is. The less I identify, okay, the more, you know. And I've seen how free Mahatmas are because they don't identify with the story of it. That's why they can put up with so much. Now, the Swami Ram Sarupananda Ji, one time there was one lady who came and stayed in the area, a Western lady. And she was very sweet, very nice lady, very good sadhak. Only one thing is she could talk non-stop. She had her special siddhi. Oh my God, now go on and on and on like this. So he has his kutir, and then the entrance door is closed off, small section. He had her sleep there. She slept there. And she stayed there for weeks or months, and he just put up with this no problem. Where, you know, you spend a few hours with that person, you want to break, okay, you know, I'm busy, you can go do that, I'm busy, because how much can you just hear somebody talking to? You know, he might have scolded her here and there in this, because he's also there to help her, whatever he can, that's why he's just around helping people. But like this, that, okay, why? Why should that disturb me in this situation or that? And then he had his stroke, right? And he said it was the best lesson he had, right? You know, you identify with our body in this, and now, you know, okay, so the body now is like this. Or my guru after his stroke, he said, I used to be the flying Swami, I used to be Hatha Yoga Master, and now I'm wheelchair Swami, and he would laugh like this. So understand the story is story, you know. The more we identify with it, the more you identify with the drama, right? Oh, everybody be quiet. No, don't bother me. I have to see my series. No, don't tell me what happened. I missed. I have to catch up and watch, you know? So we do it on ourselves like this. So in any case, then we have the priya. Here he has the ananda aspect. So this, of course, is the love, the joy. And what happens is, because I feel a sense of isolation, I feel incomplete, then people want love. They want some sort of joy, something that helps them to relax from this idea of limitation. So we look for things to help to do that. So that's why deep sleep we love, because deep sleep, then I'm free from it. I'm free from my role. And I look forward to some special things that they help me to take out of it. But then the regular mundane stuff and caught up in all sorts of things, then I feel isolated, I feel limited in some way, and then I feel, oh, I want something to help me like this. Right? So we become, so of course, there's people go to harmful things for that, or just normal day-to-day things that aren't just harmful, but still, it's we're not addicted to something that's so much, you know, causing so much problems, but still addicted to something the Swami Shivanandaji would call worldlings. We're world addicts. Something, if I don't have my tea, okay, then a problem. Or if people speak too much like this. Or if situation isn't convenient certain ways. So things like this. So we look for having the joy like this, and then look for it in circumstance. Then, as we've mentioned many times before, if your contentment is depending on setup, then later it will be cut. When it turns around, you become upset. <Like this. laughs> Very nice. So the setup will become upset like this, and this is what happens. So what happens then, and we find certain things that really help them, because we know, we see that that type of thing pretty much guarantees that I will get, you know, get that sensation, so I feel okay. That's why, you know, again, like coffee or tea like this, because it's that guaranteed you'll have some, and it makes things okay to a certain degree for a certain time. Okay, so we get used to that. Well, I'll go do yoga, right? Guaranteed, I do in the morning. I do. Mind is very quiet for a little while, for sure. Like this, some guarantee, right? It's okay, so it does, but still, that is still a sensation. I'm experiencing quiet mind. I'm experiencing some joy, right? You know, that's why people also, pets. I know when the pet comes, the pet is happy to see me, will wag its tail. Especially dogs, cats, you know, it's a little more tricky, probably with them. But a dog will come, they'll be happy in this. So they love me unconditionally, so at least I'll experience some love. Because people, I know they love me, but it's a little harder because they have so much busy in their agendas and all these things will come too. But this one, guaranteed, dog will come, yes, okay. A little, gives me a little love, now I feel that love. Now the thing is, these are things that I feel. I'll feel the love, I'll feel the contentment, the good sensation. So it's some sort of sensate thing, some sort of experiential thing. And then we're caught up in trying to get this. Mm-hmm. Now, if we analyze, if we look at it, what happens then? That's why really we have to look at what happens when I'm really happy or content. Then, who am I at that time? Who are you when you're very happy? You know, I don't think about who I am, I just am, I'm fine, right? Of course, if it goes into excitement, I'm the excited person, then it's different. Rajasa goes like this, different. But at that time, there's no question I am this, and then I just am. So I drop the other things. But I identify with the mental state from it, or the emotional state from it, and then when that changes, then it's not. Doesn't do it. And what happens is, of course, anything like this, I always want some gradation, some difference, because I can get a little tired of it, or the other way around. This exact way makes me, I like it, and then it changes a little, it doesn't come that exact same way, oh, it's not the same thing, so I'm not. But in any case, so it even from sattvic things, it's like this, you do puja or meditation, you're getting a certain feeling and you like that, and you want to hold on to that. Still, that's a specific sensation. It's not a certain state of mind. And this is one thing Gaudapadacharya talks about, Adi Guru Shankara's Guru's Guru, like this, in his Karika and the Mandukya, the only thing we've written by him like this. Small point I'll say about that. Interesting about him is, that Gaudapada, they said he comes from Eastern area, so from Orisha area. Jyoti told me Gauda, they call the very simple people that just herd cows, they're Gaudas, like this. So he came from, so he must have come from that background. It's from there. So in any case, so Gaudapadacharya, what he said is that certain things like this in religion or spiritual, they uplift somebody at first, but later they make the person get stuck. It's mm-hmm. like walking up a stairway, you know, or holding onto the railing. Mm-hmm. Now they'll say, it's very steep, so you hold and pull yourself up. Now they say, now let go of the railing, hold on the next place. No, I can't let go of this. Look how well it supported me. I don't want to let go. So in this way, we hold on to, and then we can't go the next as we're holding on to that. So I do puja, there's a nice feeling. And I know that. That's why I started doing puja. I didn't know anything puja. But then somebody, when I was new in the ashram, this one brahmacharini there every morning does puja before satsang. So I was curious, what is this? So I went, sat, oh, it was very nice. And this, so I learned I would do puja every day. Very nice feeling and everything. But then just used to, you know, the devotion of expanding and feeling the devotion, or just, okay, there's a nice sensation from it. So I have to remember it's for chitta shuddhi, to help me to think of the God, expand my mind, not in order to hold on just to that sensation. Yeah, if I'm down, let that be as something to pull me up. Okay, as a tool like this. But then I get stuck, I keep wanting to experience that. Somebody else does the puja a little differently. It doesn't feel exactly the same. No, this isn't quite my kind of thing. You know, no, you're not supposed to offer this today, you're supposed to offer that one today. This, you know, okay, I have some regulations, okay, but understanding it's not, that's not the end in itself. The feeling is again. And then also Vedanta study itself too. I study and point something out. Oh, this class I really feel good. I feel very expansive. I managed to hold on to that feeling for half a day. Oh, very nice. But again, it's the feeling from it. And then if I'm just holding on to that feeling, then literally just the most greatest in my life is just being present to my guru. Oh, feeling so expansive, so wonderful. Used to go see him, stay a few days in the ashram, come back to our Shivananda Center in New York. For a few days, feel like you're, you know, okay, nothing bothers me, I'm there. But it's kind of like I'd feel like when you drop a paper, it goes like this, you know, slowly, slowly, like that. After a few days, okay, now you're yourself. You have to deal with the whole, all of your nonsense again. So that's why it's vichara, it's inquiry. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, because that's the hardest thing. Because my guru, it's just amazing, this. And then you feel, oh, now I'm struggling so much because now all this stuff. Because Vedanta is saying yes, because when that upliftment shows you, it's like somebody takes you in the elevator, shows you there's a nice view, and this, okay, so you know the view is there. But that's why the vichara inquiry is important, because it's understanding, you know, I'm not this limited. Not that limited, whatever the experience comes, I'm still not that limited because I'm the sakshi. And as long as I'm somebody, no matter how happy that somebody is still limited. So that's conditional. It's just because it was reflecting the consciousness very clearly for a little while. But once the reflection would always be perfectly exactly like that. So I can't just rely on that, because something unlimited can't be reflected. And I'm not limited by any of these things. And the moment that's still identifying with the ananda from understanding, from being with Mahatma, from puja, from anything like this, is still reflected one, much more sattvic one. So if I'm attached to one, that's a better one than, you know, than from coffee or from, you know, from parties or who knows from what. But still, it still is. It still isn't ananda, because my ananda isn't something, an experiential one. Just I am, and I'm not limited. So of course, the more I feel not limited, the more mind will also be with that too, but I can't just identify with this. Gita, the verse that I remember, but also pravrittim cha nivrittim cha, like this, talks about how the three gunas, whether they're there or not, the mahatma isn't, the jnani isn't attached to their being there or not being there. So the mind gets a little disturbed. Okay, some disturbance came in the mind, it comes, it stays, sometime goes, not affected by it. And tamas comes, whatever, they're not affected. Not affected by it, because that's a state of mind. Because very subtle, the difference between myself and the state of mind, my experience. So this is very important to look at, because this is a trap that we get caught up in, that yes, I feel very good from it, but that feel good isn't what we're looking for, because that feel good, no matter how good, it's still a temporary thing. So it's because I've learned to disidentify, that's also. You know, that's why, again, from studying this, it's just a conclusion I've come to. I don't really need to ask, because I was thinking, oh, I'll ask about it, but it's been explained earlier when I was studying sat aspect very clear. Chit aspect is pretty clear in me, but not clear that it's all around. Ananda is what's hidden. So that's why we go from what's known to the heart, clear for us slowly to the subtler. So the more sat chit is clear, then ananda clear. So here this ananda, That's why at the beginning, the ananda we don't have to worry about as much. Because, yeah, okay, we're happy from it, but then slowly to look into the ananda we're looking for is not the limited one, because that's always limited. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, that I am, that's it. It's not, you know, just I am, I'm present, isn't an experience of elation or of any, just, you know, samatvam, unlimited. So, you know, ananta, that's why jnanam, satyam jnanam anantam, given in the Taittiriya Upanishad, anantam is unlimited, because that's what I want. I want to be unlimited. And from that unlimited, as if I look at it from an individual perspective, it's the greatest joy, because no disturbance from anything, right? When I am happy, this meaning that things aren't bothering me, so I'm not bothered by anything. So it gives like the full benefit of it. But we're still looking for just some side effect from it and holding on to that. So this is something really just we have to be aware of because of that. There's a nice example that's given about this. It's called Kaka Taliya Nyaya. It's the illustration of the crow and the coconut tree. That there's a crow that's going flying, right? And, you know, they go round and round. So it goes and lands on the coconut tree. Mm-hmm. When it lands, coconut falls down. Crow, you know, weighs nothing. And, you know, and so it, and so the coconut falling, just by chance when it was there, really has nothing to do with the crow landing in this, but it happened then. So the crow thinks, you know, wow, I must be very powerful. I have a great siddhi. I'm very powerful crow. The fact that I landed here made it fall down. Look at this. Now, but really what happens, just by chance, this happened and that happened. We say the joy, happiness I have from things, it's like that. By chance it comes in line. By chance it does. And then, why do some things make me happy, but other things make other people happy? Not the same thing, right? Why did this used to make me happy? Now it doesn't make me happy before it did. So, by chance it aligned, and then it doesn't quite align, then okay, it doesn't anymore. So, this is what the worldly happiness say, that it's just, you can't really. Mm-hmm. We stop looking. And then we're looking for the happiness. So I stop looking, I'm just present. Oh, why do I need to look for it? When I'm trying to get it, I'm keeping it away from me, and I get a little bit of whiffs of it, so I think I'm close. When I totally stop looking for it, everything's fine. Because just by looking for it, I'm creating disturbance, saying I'm not happy, like this. And of course, ananda also love, as long as the love is conditional, as long as love due to a role, you love your children, spouse, whoever it is, parents, the God, like this, you love as a role, I'm as a parent loving my child, then, as long as that, then there is not pure love, but there's some expectation, some other things there. When there's the real love is there, there's no form to it. No form, nothing, it's just, so then when you're loving as a role, then it's, you know, it will get into some tainting like this. Swami Tattvedananda, he goes so much of this about so much how Guru Shishya goes. He says as much it becomes an exploitation, right? Because the guru has somebody to serve in this and listen to them, nod their head. So they feel, you know, so they feel very, and they, so some expectation built there. And the Shishya expecting, you know, the guru to be feeding them something. So it becomes also, he says, even that becomes very tainted at least. That's why some Mahatmas like him, they're not taking role as guru. They say they're not guru, nothing. They don't have disciples. They don't want, because they see that that's also a trap like this. Any role is a trap, of course, like this. But in any case, so as long as it's as a role, how can the pure love be there? Just so that's how our relations, it's a very good training ground for us to, you know, to overcome, to go beyond, just do what, you know, serve best I can the person from, you know, how I can, and that's it. Not to, otherwise it becomes some identification, attachment to role. So there's a beautiful example of this. If you haven't seen this movie, you should see. I think it's called It's a Beautiful Day in This Neighborhood. I saw it a few years ago. It's about Mr. Rogers. When I grew up, I'm very lucky, at least for a few years when I was a kid here, that I got to see Mr. Rogers on TV. The best children's program ever. Like this, kids should always watch. They should always have it on. So much is good that I didn't know this. I saw somebody put a video about it. Is they were cutting funding to, I think it was NPR, where he would do his show for kids. And what happened is he went and he testified and he said how he can feel the anger and frustration of kids. He really feels it. And what he does really helps them. Mm-hmm. And because he went and testified, instead of decreasing, they increased it, increased funding like this. Mm-hmm. So in this movie, what happens is this: there's some reporter that's sent to interview him, and he felt, oh, you know, why are they sending me to do this? It's like a punishment, he feels. This person just have it, that's looking like he's always very happy and for kids, and you know, so he decided he's going to go and really look into, you know, must be some fake thing behind. And he couldn't believe this person's always very kind and very sweet and everything. And so at some point he talks to his wife, to Mr. Rogers' wife, and she said, you know, just like people in the morning, they go exercise, right? They go to the pool and they'll swim certain laps, they'll do certain exercise regularly. He, so many years, he's put out, this is his exercise, puts the exercise to be a good, kind person like this. And that just, you know, so that's accumulation becomes part of his nature like this. So, really beautiful example. So the effort has to be put in to drop, you know, drop, to be, that my life is karma yoga, is just serving what's needed, what's best, put my things aside. You know, and we have all the examples of it, right? Lord Rama, they show. What's the other example they have there? Name not coming to mind. The young man who would carry his parents to Sharavan something. What is it? Sharavana? What is it? Sharavana Kumar, right? Yeah. And carry his parents. So like this, the whatever, how we can serve best like this. Then, so, and pure love is, then it's natural. When I'm put myself outside of the way, pure love is natural. If it's something I'm putting effort to do, this expectation, then it's an issue like this. Because any person, any relation, you can see some defects and problems, and you can always see. But that has to be put aside, because then I'm caught up in my own ego, which is my own identification, my own avidya, then that thickens in this way. So, you know, so there's so many examples you can find, people looking beyond that, and that's, you know, so then what I am is beyond that. So this is what this, from perspective of love, joy, happiness, we have to go see beyond it like this. That just that helps us to drop the identification. This is where karma yoga is so important. You know, do what's needed, drop the identification, then no problem like this. So this is a little bit about the ananda perspective like this. So here again, in these three verses, it's not giving us a new pramanam or something, way to see that. It's the other way around, saying, look, if you really look at it closely, the limitation we talk from these perspectives, you can't find. Where are you going to find it? You know, because you're just taking it for granted without really looking into it. So, and that is the avidya, that's ignorance, is meaning not really looking into something. You have something there, you take it as it is without investigating. And this is something also, Swami Tattvedananda Ji points out so nicely. He says how when we study Vedanta, we get caught up in a lot of concepts, and he calls it conceptual Vedanta. And that becomes an issue because, again, then you frame it in a box like this. Where the concept is to point out a direction, something, a stepping stone maybe, but to be very careful that, so much so that when somebody was asking there about, okay, they're going to teach beginner people, new people to Vedanta, should they start Tattva Bodha? He said, don't just start with Tattva Bodha, because you'll make everything into concepts. Mm. And then from there, the person will just take Vedanta as conceptual thing. Be very careful. He said, if you're teaching that, you put something else. Put something else in that's not conceptual as part of it. Mm-hmm. Add that to it too. Otherwise, it becomes a whole conceptual thing and the person's trapped. It's not going to, they'll be limited like this. So in this way, to be very careful, it's not just conceptual things. Any of the concepts are just points in order to do vichara on them. Not as an absolute thing. Because then it becomes some other dogma, some other idea, and then we get lost in that. So they're helpful as, you know, like something just to measure a little bit here and there, to point in direction like this. But otherwise it's it becomes another idea in my mind. Another idea and then another. What is this? You know, we talk Brahman. If Brahman is an idea, or Atma is an idea, then we're stuck in that idea. That's what Brahman means, you know, all pervasive, right? Boundless. That's not a thing. Boundless isn't a thing. It's, you know, breaks all things. We make a concept out of that. Like again, I said, the shunya, if somebody's meditating nothingness, again, the idea will become a thing, then it doesn't work. So to take it, not have it just be a specific thing like this, all of them refer looking into. And we even say just Brahman, all the names of the deities also coming from that, like Vishnu. You know, people made the Murti and all, but really Vishnu means, right? It means all pervasive. It's all pervasive like this. But then we take it and we make, hold on to the concepts. Because the mind likes to put things in the cubby holes because that's how it can understand. So yes, some understanding is there, yes, but in order to, you know, you can say God, you know, like when you, you know, you're building a house with some scaffolding, or, you know, I remember architectural drawing because when I learned 1 year in high school, you know, you make certain lines in order just to be, you make lines as just in order so you can make the line that goes between, you know, the main line that goes between them. So it's like this, just like a little sketch to, but not the main picture. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a sketch to get a little bit of the area, but then you have to look beyond it like this. Otherwise it's, you know, get trapped like this. So that's where then it doesn't become alive, you can say. So this is what we have to. And last point about this one thing recently now, in his class, Swami Tatvidananjali, he pointed out, he said, he studied Vedanta with his father. His father is also a great scholar and everything. He said he studied it, but he learned Vedanta from his mother. His mother is simple illiterate, like this, very simple illiterate. Said that, but he learned from seeing her more than this. So the concept's helpful, but they're not. They're just pointing in the direction. So that's again, so this with the Ananda, you know, how are you going to point it out like this? You can demolish what it isn't. And then, so this way, see that we see the whole, anything based on Dvaita doesn't have a base. And that's it. Then, if we try to prove the Advaita in this way, then that proof itself becomes something that is, you know, you can't, it's, the mind can't prove it. It's, the mind has to be gone. We see beyond the mind. So proof is for the intellect. So at first we convince the intellect of it, but then we have to look at it as it is, like this. So in that way. So these are a few of these ideas here about the, he hasn't, in the text, still hasn't let go of the satas, purity. He said pritihi before priya here, really to ingrain it, I think. So nice to really keep looking at this, how it's pointing out all different directions to totally clarify. Very, very nice. So I think for me, studying this, that explaining about the Satchidananda has really been very nice. How do you say? Opened a lot of avenues about it that I didn't know before, so it's very wonderful. So let's chant these three verses one more time, then we conclude them. Did you find it on your phone there? So it says, starts with na jiva brahmanor bhedaha.
Na jiva brahmanor bhedaha.
सत्तारूपेण विद्यते
सत्तारूपेण विद्यते
सत्ताभेदेन मानं स्यात्
सत्ताभेदेन मानं स्यात्
इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः
इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः
न जीव ब्रह्मणोर्भेदः
न जीव ब्रह्मणो भेदः
स्फूर्तिरूपेण विद्यते
स्फूर्तिरूपेण विद्यते
स्फूर्तिभेदेन मानं स्यात्
स्फूर्तिभेदेन मानं स्यात्
इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः
इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः
न जीव ब्रह्मणोर्भेदः
न जीव ब्रह्मणोर्भेदः
प्रियरूपेण विद्यते
प्रियरूपेण विद्यते
प्रियभेदेन मानं स्यात्
प्रियभेदेन मानं स्यात्
इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः
इति वेदान्तडिण्डिमः
पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।